suddenly like to introduce Basil Eggington, who's a barley program leader with the University of Adelaide. He leads and develops the malt and feed barley varieties for Southern Australia. He's also involved in research projects looking at topics such as boron quality, boron toxicity and cost. Thanks, Basil.
Cheers, John. I might just ask you to take a few steps forward. We've had a microphone failure, so if you can't hear me, please squeeze in a little bit. Hands up everyone who has tried a Chinese beer. Got a reasonable number. Hands up who thought it tasted good. None. All right. Despite that general idea, those big brewers who are buying the bulk of the malting barley that's exported out of South Australia actually take a lot of time and effort to create that particular flavour profile and to make sure every batch and every year they're producing exactly the same thing. People, not you, like it and buy it, and they've literally spent tens of millions of dollars on developing that recipe, that brand, and that part of the market. So for them, when we roll up and say, okay, we've got a new malting barley variety for you, they go, I don't care, I'll just buy schooner, please. I'm happy with that, it works. So we have a big challenge, always when we're introducing new malting barleys to the international market, or even for that matter, the domestic market. So hands up who likes VB? None of you. But the makers of VB don't want the flavour to change either. Okay, so we have that same issue. So the point of this little commentary is to try and give you an idea of the process that we're about to go through, or already going through, that puts some delay on when you're going to see full malting premiums, full marketing options for La Trobe, for Compass, and again for any new malting variety that's on the market. So most individual breweries might take 2 years to convince that a new barley is going to fit their process system, fit their recipe, not change their flavour profile of their beer, and then they're happy to go. So a lot of work happens around that market development process, from small-scale samples to containers to a hatch, well before we can be talking about your sort of marketing options that you have for your established varieties at the moment. So I guess this year you can expect to see some limited segregation opportunities, certainly for La Trobe and probably two or three for Compass, but the pricing that might go around those may well reflect little better than feed, if any premium at all, until we get through that process in terms of market acceptance. So in that context, it's probably useful to understand that those varieties that form the bulk of South Australian production at the moment, so Scope, to a lesser extent Bull Oak, obviously Hindmarsh and Commander, they're going to remain the most marketable varieties for you in terms of premiums and segregation opportunities and the most buyers in the marketplace for the next couple of years, as those newer varieties come in to replace them. So it's important you have that when you're planning and thinking about what sort of returns on a per ton basis you're going to expect from new varieties that you're adopting. So a quick recap of, one other comment, I guess. In terms of the barley area that you're growing, this year, largely at the expense of canola maybe, South Australia's got about 60,000 hectares more barley sown than last year. That's a little bit up on the five-year average, but still well down on what you guys were doing 2000 to 2005. So although there's been a bit of a swing in historic terms, it's actually a trivial increase in area sown to barley. So last year, of course, like every year, it's a unique pattern, a unique season. We had pretty early sowing opportunities in most districts, pretty good early season conditions, an unusually mild, warm winter. So we got a lot of good early growth, biomass, high yield potential, and then of course a very dry late winter, very dry spring, but largely we were saved by moderate spring temperatures. So across the national variety trial series, I think we saw results that are probably pretty consistent with farmer experience in the different regions. Generally across the mid-north and York Peninsula, amazing yields given the lack of rain. And a little bit dependent on time of sowing and soil type, quite a lot of pressure on grain size. So in the paper, in your books, Rob Wheeler and I put together a summary of the NVT results from last year. If you look through those average yield results, they're largely in line with what we'd expect to see out of the varieties that we know and understand. Perhaps that earlier finish to the season sees something like Keel at the very end, still the earliest maturing variety on the market, probably bubbles to the top a little bit. And even at those high yield potential trials last year, later maturing options like Navigator or Oxford really weren't able to outcompete the earlier mid-maturing varieties like Latrobe, Compass and Fathom. So pretty harsh penalties for the later maturing types, even at those high yield potentials. I guess the York Peninsula data looks pretty much in line with what we'd expect in the longer term analysis. If you look through that column, that's the arithmetic mean of the mid-north trials, you'll see Latrobe and you'll see Hindmarsh top that district at 109% of the mean. And a little bit unusual to see Compass behind that at 105. So if you look through the individual trial data, you'll see that that's largely from a pretty modest performance at Turretfield. I look at the Turretfield trial, I don't actually know why Compass kind of tumbled down. It was actually below the yield of Commander even, which we don't see many data points like that, but I guess it serves as a reminder that even when you've got varieties that are showing a clear advantage in any given plot or paddock or trial, it's not guaranteed that you're going to get that. I guess even with that data point in there though, the long-term NVT analysis for the mid-north puts Compass at 5% yield above Hindmarsh. So there's now quite a lot of data points in there to give us a fair bit of confidence about its yield. The second table that's in there is a mean data points, mean values for grain plumpness or retention values over the last 3 years for the NVT sites across the mid-north region. And I guess not unlike last year, in a lot of situations we do see quite a lot of pressure on grain size, not always showing up as high screens, more often low retention values. And if you look through that data, you'll see why Maritime is the long-term benchmark for physical grain quality. It's quite a star. But Fathom pretty close to it, and Compass also pretty close. We've all got a lot of experience with Hindmarsh. We know how reliable it is agronomically. We know how reliable it is getting into feed one. But I think that table probably shows it's one of its small weaknesses in terms of the frequency that it gets over that 2.5 mil screen at 70% required for malt one. So you look through all that data, you'll see it's actually a little below Schooner for its physical grain quality. So I guess in terms of marketing the Hindmarsh types into those malting categories or food categories, that's the one sort of weakness. Aside from the national variety trials, of course, we have the Hart trials, which we probably should reproduce the results in the book for you, but those of you that come to this event regularly and tolerate listening to me will perhaps remember that the last couple of years I've annoyed Hayden Cookle in particular and wheat breeders in general, as well as some statisticians, by comparing the results for the barley trial with the wheat trial alongside it. So not statistically correct to do that. But the last few years they were actually sown on the same date, had the same end management. So you know, we can look across and just see how they've been travelling, and I've been having a bit of fun with that. Last year, unfortunately, the barley was sown on the 15th of May, and the wheat was sown on the 8th of May. And of course, last year there was some pretty sharp penalties for seeding date. So the wheat did get an advantage out of that early sowing, and Mace just managed to match Commander. So good job out of that, and still well short of Compass, of course. So the trial last year, again, amazing yield. So there's 5.3 tonnes per hectare was the top performers, with Keel, Fathom and Compass at that level, and Hindmarsh at about 4.9, along with Latrobe, the next best varieties. And like in the NVT, we saw massive pressure on grain size. So there are only a handful of varieties that actually made it into the Feed 1 spec, and I think only three that made it into the Malt 1 retention grade. So worth having a look at that data set. Of course, it's on the Hart website if you're interested. One of the other trials that was here last year was a time of sowing experiment with barley. Now, of course, it's very topical. You're seeing plenty of it through James Hunt's work in the wheat space. In the barley, I guess the results probably pretty much in line with what I would have expected. So they took Oxford and Navigator as two pretty long season types, and Fathom and Compass as the main season types. They had seeding dates at 14th of April, 8th of May, 2nd July. And really the result, it's a little bit like the Mace story. Fathom and Compass give their highest yields when they're sown in that early May period. Going earlier than that doesn't actually improve the outcome. With a true long season type like Oxford, you do get a benefit from going very early, but the yield result wasn't any better than what Compass and Fathom achieved in a conventional window anyway. So I think the take-home message for me out of that and trials like that is, you know, the early sowing opportunity story may be a bit more relevant for wheat, and obviously you've got to have the right genotypes, whether it's a Trojan or a something else. And perhaps in the barley space, you don't really see, at least out of this suite of varieties, much benefit in going ultra early. Okay, so the trial behind us, sown 6th of May, 100 kilos of N. I don't know the fungicide regime, but it's very clean, so I suspect it's a Sestiva Plus treatment. And probably not going to have quite the yield potential that we saw out of last year. But in Maritime, you can actually see that it hasn't been a perfect season. There are quite reasonably strong boron toxicity symptoms, so Maritime's got its roots down into that hostile subsoil layer, and it's actually starting to drag moisture up from that layer, and you know, without more rain, it's going to turn a little bit ugly, and we'll see the rest of the varieties in here starting to look thirsty. So maybe just some quick comments as we go along. I won't spend much time on the older varieties that you know about. There are still some Keel growers, as I said, the earliest maturing option available, and that does work in certain situations. Maritime, believe it or not, some people are going to have a crack at now that they think Sestiva plus a tilt might keep net form at bay even with that, so that's kind of interesting. Not aware of a lot of Oxford production in South Australia. I guess the genuine high rainfall zones of Western Districts of Victoria have done some work with that. Schooner we can ignore. Fleet was up around, I think, within South Australia last year, as much as 300,000 tonnes of production, but we probably see that sliding in the face of both Fathom and Compass and Latrobe, so we can see that one probably going out. Fathom, couple of years in, it's probably getting adoption by on-farm experience and word of mouth more than marketing promotion. I think some of the things about Fathom maybe not borne out so much in trials, so its yield results are not obviously better than Hindmarsh, but a very different plant type, very different weed competitiveness. If you're worried about whether you've got the right thing, now's the perfect time to look at it. The two-tone head colour, very obvious that it's Fathom. So we're seeing sort of a gradual adoption of Fathom into the feed barley role over the last couple of years since its release. I'm Martin Latrobe. Head to head, obviously we've got now a lot of data points on Latrobe to know that agronomically you're not going to get any surprises out of it in terms of its comparison with Hindmarsh. The long-term yield results say that it's basically even or 1% better in terms of yield, so you're not certainly not going to go backwards. And of course it does have the moulding accreditation, so we hope to look forward to better prices in time for Latrobe compared to what you had for Hindmarsh. But having said that, Hindmarsh is known by every Chinese brewer, so there will continue to be marketing options for Hindmarsh in the medium term. The other obvious head-to-head, Compass and Commander. Here, they're actually looking very, very similar. Under other situations, we tend to see Compass being a little earlier in maturity than Commander generally, and depending on seeding date and temperature profile, can be even earlier than Hindmarsh. So not always so closely aligned to Commander's phenology. I'll try and avoid wandering down. So the next obvious head-to-head, Scope has been adopted really rapidly across South Australia. The value of that immunochemistry in the barley part of the rotation is pretty obvious. It's taken a bit of time, but Scope now has got some solid pricing premiums in the malting market. But its yield potential is well off the pace in terms of what the leading varieties are. So we have Bill from Intergrain. We'll just give Bill a chance to introduce the next variety along, which is the alternative to Scope.
Yeah, good afternoon. My name is Bill Greenfield. I hope you can hear me at the back there. An alternative to Scope, Intergrain is releasing an intolerant Latrobe type available to growers in 2016. Pretty much all the things that you know and like about Hindmarsh are reflected agronomically in this variety. It's got the good head retention, the good straw strength, the lodging resistance. And in terms of where it sits, it is a good jump up from the Scope, where you've had good experiences in terms of growing Hindmarsh in the paddocks. Good test weights, good sprouting tolerance, and the disease profile very similar to what Hindmarsh and Latrobe types have expressed. Also has that short Rochilla hair, so you don't have to deal with the itch, which is probably something when you get home that everyone's happy about. It will be undergoing malt accreditation over the next couple of years, but will be released as feed in 2016. If you're currently growing Scope, you've had a good experience with Hindmarsh or Latrobe, and you want some immune tolerance, is a good option for you.
Thank you. Cool. In the interest of time, I'm not going to take you through all the varieties. There are some notes that are updated on in terms of some local recent commentary against those varieties in your book. I guess increasingly I'm getting asked, well, what's the next big thing after Compass and Latrobe? I think really the opportunity for our industry is to digest those two before we get too worried about the next big thing. But there is something a little bit interesting at the very, very end. This is numbered EB1401. It's a high rainfall option that I guess is a competitor to Westminster, which is also down the far end. So Westminster's actually grabbed a pretty strong foothold in the western districts of Victoria and performing pretty well in, let's say, plus 5 tonnes type environments. And the EB line at the other end showed us last year half a tonne per hectare advantage over Westminster across a whole range of yield potentials. So some nice yield in a high rainfall environment, but the other thing is we've already worked with that line with the world's biggest brewing company, and it has a couple of tricks that they like. So this probably won't be a Compass story where we come to you and share the risk of growing it while it's still going through that industry acceptance phase. That EB line at the very end will be much more like what we've historically done, where all of the market development work and the buyers are all in place before we actually go out and sell seed or begin production with you guys. So something a little bit different and back to the future there with that line at the end. So there's 10 to go. Jono, do we call time and ask for questions, or if there's any other topics people would like to